Srila Prabhupada ki, Shri Bhakti Vedanta ki, Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Giridas Maharaj ki, Nitai Goprima Nandi, Hari 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 Bhu. Okay. So tonight we shall go through the 8th canto as an overview, discuss what we taught last year in the 8th canto. First of all, I'll give you your key memory verses for the first section of the Bhagavatam. So the key memory verses for this first section are, Canto 9, Chapter 4, verse number 18. Canto 9, Chapter 4, verse number 19. And Canto 9, Chapter 4, verse number 20. So these are the three verses for the first. Next week I'll give you your open book topics for this first section. So that is 9.4.18, 9.4.19, and 9.4.20. Okay, so last year we discussed Canto 8. So we'll go through the various chapters, 24 chapters, and we'll discuss a little bit about it. And if anyone wants to add anything or to ask any questions, you can ask as we go about that. So the first chapter is called The Manus, the Administrators, and the Universe. So we find in the first chapter, from Canto 3, Canto 4, 5, 6, and 7, for those four cantos, Swayambhuva Manu and the descendants of Swayambhuva Manu are discussed. So we hear a discussion about Prahlad Maharaj, Dhruva Maharaj, Swayambhuva Manu's children, Priyavrata and Uttanapad, his daughters Akuti, Devahuti and Prasuti. So his various descendants are discussed. Then when Canto 8 comes, after the discussion of the various Manus and his descendants, then we hear a question by Parikshit Maharaj about the other Manus. So the other Manus are described or discussed. So Canto 8 begins with the first chapter describing the various Manus who have come following Swayambhuva Manu and their descendants, which will come from those personalities. So it's a very basic chapter describing these things. Next, the second chapter is called The Elephant Gajendra's Crisis. So Gajendra Moksha. How Gajendra became liberated from the material energy. So first of all, we understand that there is a description given of the heavenly planets where the pastime took place. Gajendra was in the heavenly planets. He was a heavenly elephant, very powerful. He was the king of all the elephants. And it is described what it is like in the heavenly planets. And it describes things which are beyond our estimation and calculation in terms of description. You know, minerals and gems which are studding the ground, and describes those mountains of gold and mountains of emerald and these things. So things that we may not experience in this part of the universe. So first of all, the Bhagavatam is giving us a great test of
faith.
Yeah, our Shraddha. Bhagavatam will do this all the way through. It will describe things which cannot be estimated or cannot be experienced in this realm or in the earthly realm, in this part of the universe. So therefore people, it will test their faith, you know, whether or not we actually believe all of these things. So then secondly, the description is given that Gajendra was bathing himself and enjoying in the association of many she elephants. So the Bhagavad Gita is once again warning us about becoming attached to Bhoga and Aishwarya. Bhoga Aishwarya Prasaktanam. Krishna says within the Gita. In the material world, everyone becomes attached to Bhoga, which means sense enjoyment, and Aishwarya. Aishwarya means high levels of opulence. So Gajendra was experiencing these things as a king of the elephants in the heavenly planets. He had a great opportunity for Aishwarya and great opportunity for sense gratification. Even though he had this opportunity to enjoy all these things, the Bhagavatam warns us not to become attached to these things unnecessarily, because Krishna says in the Gita, they will bewilder your intelligence and they will cause you to forget Krishna. So a devotee must be cautious not to have too much sense gratification and also not to have too much renunciation. Both are negative. They are opposite sides of the same coin. Sense gratification and renunciation. Sometimes devotees become too much absorbed in sense gratification, but other times they become too much absorbed in renunciation. And if either one is overly indulged in, then one becomes weak in one's bhakti. In other words, you try to be more renounced than what you are, then you will meditate on sense gratification. And if you absorb yourself too much in sense gratification, you cannot think of Krishna. So therefore it is mentioned that we must be very careful about overly absorbing ourselves in sense gratification. Then, it describes that while he was in the water, he was attacked by a huge crocodile. What was the name of the crocodile?
He was Huhu in previous life.
Previous life, yeah. Previous life is Maharaj Huhu. The crocodile, he attacked Gajendra, and a huge fight ensued. Now, Prabhupada uses this point to explain to us that we have to be properly situated in our ashram, in the material world. Because if you try to act on the platform of being a renunciate without being qualified, without having the atika, then you will simply fall prey to sense gratification. So therefore you have to be properly situated. And Gajendra, even though he was so powerful, because he was in the water and was being attacked by the crocodile is more powerful in the water. Gajendra may have been able to defeat him on the land, but in the water he was more powerful. So Prabhupada explains that we have to be situated according to the right time, place and circumstance. We have to be properly situated according to our ashram. And basically it's two choices, whether you stay renounced or become a grihastha. So for most of us, all of us here, basically, it means we have to become grihastha. We'll be stronger to practice our Krishna consciousness within the grihastha ashram. And Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur has said that grihastha ashram is a good position for the Vaishnavas in the age of Kali Yuga. So mostly you'll see in Kali Yuga, you see grihasthas. Even in the other yugas, you mostly see grihasthas. It is a good position for the devotee to advance in spiritual life. So, he was offering prayers to the Lord. Because being attacked by the alligator, or the crocodile, he began to become weak. And Prabhupada explains that these tests which come are sent by Krishna. Sometimes we become overcome by the material energy. Do you ever find that the material energy is overcoming you? Giving you a hard time? Making your life miserable? Anyone relate to what I'm talking about tonight?
Yes.
Okay. This is the material energy. It is meant to do this to us. But what is the result? The result is that when we become overcome by the material energy, we'll become weaker, right? And then we have to surrender more to Krishna. You have to become more dependent on Krishna. So this is an opportunity for us to become more dependent upon Krishna. That is the test. You have to either choose Maya or Krishna. Who will you become more attracted to, more attached to? If you're attached to Krishna, you will pass the test easily. So it is the test for all of us. These difficulties are sent by Krishna himself. So Krishna, he gives us these tests to make us humble, surrendered, more attached to him, so that we can advance more in Krishna consciousness. So Gajendra, he understood that he was being tested, and then he began to call out to the Lord. Right? He surrendered to Krishna. That was his mentality. Oh, so were you here last night? What did we say last night about punctuality? Don't make this a habit of 8 o'clock, right? What time did we say last night in the class?
7:30.
7:30 is starting time. We said, we'll give you up until 7:40. Now, hands up if that is acceptable to you. No? No, everyone else can come late, but Jamuna said you will come on time. Okay, so 7:40. Okay, don't come in at 8 o'clock. So, he began to call out to the Lord, and he offered prayers which he had heard in his previous lifetime. Prayers that he had memorized, he began to offer to the Lord. And he attracted the attention of the Lord.
He was King Indrajumna.
Indrajumna, yeah. Yeah, the description is given in the next chapter of his previous life. So he was cursed to become an elephant. Who was cursed to become the alligator? And then he attracted the Lord himself. The Lord himself came and liberated him, gave him moksha. And the past one is called Gajendra, moksha. So he gave moksha to him. He came and he gave him his own darshan. And he liberated him from birth and death. So Rupa Goswami analyzes there are four people who surrendered to Krishna based on Krishna's teachings in the Gita. One who is in distress, which is most of us. One who wants wealth. One who wants, who is inquisitive, and one who wants the knowledge. So the one who is in distress, the example which is given is Gajendra. The person who wants wealth is? Dhruv. The one who wants, who is inquisitive, that is? The four Kumaras. Yeah. And then who is the one who wants knowledge? No one remembers? Who wanted knowledge and who was inquisitive?
I think phases of Nandisharanya were inquisitive and four Kumaras wanted knowledge.
Wanted knowledge.
Yeah.
And the sages were inquisitive. Okay. Okay. So, Gajendra, he was the one who was?
Distressed.
So feeling distressed, he called out to the Lord, and the Lord himself appeared to him. So in other words, it does not matter what our motivation is, we should approach Krishna. Right? If you're distressed, who should you approach?
Krishna.
Because who else can help you? No one else can help you. There is no help in this world. This world is simply meant for giving you suffering. Dukalayam. Krishna says, this is the nature of the material world. So we have to surrender to Krishna. He's the only person who can assist us. So then we see the third chapter is called Gajendra's Prayers of Surrender. So these are very famous prayers which are offered by Gajendra to the Lord. Now when the Lord comes, he uses his chakra, his Sudarshana, to decapitate the crocodile. And the crocodile also attains moksha. So anything which is done to us by the Lord is for our benefit. So therefore Lord Chaitanya says in Shikshastika, whether you handle me roughly by your embrace or make me broken hearted by not being present before me, still you are my Lord, birth after birth. So a devotee does not require that Krishna is necessarily kind. A devotee simply surrenders to Krishna unconditionally. Whether Krishna makes our life difficult or makes it easy, we just surrender to Krishna. Then the fourth chapter is called Gajendra's Return to the Spiritual World. And then it is described about the previous life of the two personalities and how they took birth into the bodies of an elephant and a crocodile. So this was a punishment for their misbehavior. So therefore we are reminded that we must surrender to Krishna under all circumstances. But you can't come this late. If you want to come to the course, you have to come early. Otherwise, don't come in late. That's our rule in the class. No latecomers. So, in the previous life, they committed great offences. So the Bhagavatam is warning us again and again and again, and especially this year, we see in the ninth canto, there was a lot of emphasis about committing offences. And it is like a final warning, because the ninth canto is the final canto before we reach the tenth canto, which we hope to study next year. So in the ninth canto, it describes that there is a great deal of allurement from sense gratification, especially the opposite sex. We see many pastimes in the ninth canto. And we also see the danger of committing offences. So this is reiterated again and again in the Bhagavatam, and especially in the ninth canto, it will be reiterated a number of times, because the Bhagavatam is warning us that if we want to go to Krishna, which is our goal, the tenth canto is called Ashraya. Ashraya means our shelter. So our goal is to meditate fully on Krishna's pastimes in Vrindavan especially. So to enter into that pastime and that meditation, one must avoid offences. And one must give up attachment to bhoga and aishwarya, sense gratification, especially attachment to the opposite sex. Therefore, we are being warned that even as a devotee, if you commit an offence, you may have to take birth in a lower species of life. Just like Huhu and Injunjumna, they had to take birth as elephant and crocodile. And we see in South India many examples of the elephants being devotees. Many of the temples, many pastimes where the elephants and the animals, they offer obeisances to the deities every day on a regular basis. So it's obvious that they are devotees from the previous life who have somehow gone into the lower birth. So it is a serious affair. If we commit offences, we may have to take birth again as an animal. Okay.
Actually, the Yendra, he then commit great serious offense.
He didn't commit a serious offense?
No, he was just cursed by when he was meditating in his previous life, and he didn't see that there was anything that came.
He was absorbed in meditation.
Did he call it serious offense?
The point is you have to be careful.
Okay.
The point is to be careful.
Okay.
Otherwise you don't know where you'll take birth in your next lifetime.
That's
If you become an animal, then we have to look after you.
But can you go?
Yeah.
In this instance, he was in deep meditation. And he wouldn't know who has come. So, do you still blame him for this?
Yeah, so it shows us the example. Sometimes the Bhagavatam or the Vedic literatures, they show us very extreme examples for our benefit. So it's not necessarily that it would happen to us, but it is showing us how much we have to be careful. So the point is just be careful about offending devotees. That's the main point. Any other points?
We even know the example of Bharat Maharaj, that is,
he was on power platform still became a dear and that wasn't because of an offense, but it was because of the world he had that means. Lack of frustration. Mm-hmm. You mentioned the importance of prayers, more of prayers, because we have to remember the prayers.
Yeah, I mean, that's a nice point that the benefit of memorizing prayers. So we are encouraged to memorize the prayers of the previous acharyas. So that we can, possibly at the time of death even, we can meditate on those prayers. So Gajendra was able to remember many prayers from his previous life, and that saved him at the time of distress. At the time of distress, I'll probably just chant the name of Krishna. That's what I hope to do. I don't think I'll be able to recite prayers. Gajendra was very elevated that he could recite prayers, but at least if we just remember Krishna, that's enough. So, any other points?
Gajendra had to fight 1,000 celestial years with the crocodile. Very, very long time.
That's what the material energy is like. Sometimes when we're suffering, it feels like it just keeps going on and on and on. It's a test. Krishna never says that the material world will be easy. He never says that. He doesn't give any guarantee the material world will be easy. Okay, so next chapter. The demigods appeal to the Lord for protection. So now the pastime changes. And the demigods, they have once again committed an offense. Who did they offend? Who did Indra offend? Not specifically. No. In this particular pastime. No, that was in a different... In this particular pastime, he has offended Durvasa. In a previous pastime, he's offended Brihaspati. But the point is, once again, it's being emphasized, be very careful of Vaishnava aparad, or offending saintly personalities. Even if they're not Vaishnavas, you have to be very careful. Even when you go to India, there are Shaivites, and some of them are very advanced. They may not be devotees, but they have a lot of Shakti. So you have to be very careful about committing offenses. So, the demigods, they became weakened because they had made an offense. And therefore, the demons became more powerful. So the demigods, what do? When they're in trouble?
Lord.
They approach the Lord. What do we do when we're in trouble?
Lord.
We approach the Lord. What do we do when we're out of trouble? We go on holiday. The tendency of the conditioned soul is to pray to the Lord when he's in trouble. But when he's enjoying, he tends to forget Krishna. That is our tendency. When we're enjoying too much in the material, we forget Krishna. Therefore, Krishna generally doesn't let his devotees enjoy too much. Because if you enjoy too much, you'll forget Krishna. So Krishna makes sure that you have adequate difficulty in your spiritual life so that you can remember him constantly. So we see that the demigods have gone and then they've appealed to the Lord to assist them, and then the Lord, he comes in order to assist. And he advises the demigods to begin to churn the milk ocean to get nectar so they will become powerful once again so that they can defeat the demons. So, the demigods in the next chapter, chapter 6, the demigods and the demons declare a truce. So the demigods, they approach the Lord, they approach the demons. When the demons see the demigods approaching, they want to fight with them. But Bali Maharaj, because he's a saintly person, and he is the head of the demons, then he says, no, we will listen to them. And then they make a truce. And they agree to work together in order to churn the milk ocean to produce nectar. So then the Lord himself takes a form. He picks up the Mandara mountain and he takes it to the milk ocean on the back of
Garuda.
This shows how powerful Garuda is. Garuda is so powerful that the Lord is carrying a mountain on his back. And he carries that mountain, he places it in the ocean of milk. And Garuda is so powerful he can carry the Lord and the mountain. This shows how powerful a devotee can become when he is empowered or blessed by Krishna. Just like Srila Prabhupada, how powerful he was being blessed by Krishna, fully surrendered to Krishna. So, when you become fully surrendered to Krishna, you become empowered by Krishna. Krishna Shakti Vina. You cannot spread Krishna consciousness unless you have Shakti, which is given by Krishna himself. So he took the mountain, placed it within the ocean, and then they asked Garuda to leave. Why did they ask Garuda to leave? Yeah, the serpent's name is Vasuki. And what does Garuda eat? Snakes. So they say, go away, because otherwise you'll eat Vasuki. And they need Vasuki to churn the mountain. So demigods had one end. Asuras had one end. They began to churn the mountain. So they were cooperating together. So we see in the next chapter, it is called Lord Shiva Saves the Universe by Drinking the Poison. So the poison begins to come from the ocean. And the Bhagavatam again and again shows us the potency of Lord Shiva. Very important to understand Lord Shiva's position. He is not Vishnu, but he is not Jiva. In India, people don't understand this. In India, people don't understand most things. They don't understand the difference between Shiva and Vishnu. Or God and Lord Shiva. Lord Shiva is not fully as potent as Vishnu, or Krishna, or Narayan. But he is Mahadev. He's far more powerful than all the demigods. But he's not quite on the level of God himself. And then he's much more powerful than the Jivas. But in India, they tend to get everything mixed up. And they say everything is one and everyone is equal and like that. But it is not correct. It is not the Siddhanta or the conclusion of the Srimad Bhagavatam. The Bhagavatam concludes that Shiva is not the full manifestation of God. He's a partial manifestation. But he's much more powerful than all the other demigods. So we have to understand his position properly. So he drinks all the ocean, he drinks all the poison, which first, when they first churn, the poison comes. So out of compassion, because he is Vaishnavanam, Yatashambhu. So he is the greatest devotee. A devotee is Paradukaduki. He likes to make sure everyone else is
happy.
So therefore he drinks the poison. Just like sometimes the devotees, they solve the problems in our life. If you have problems in your life, what is the best thing to do? What's the best thing to do? Go to the devotees. And devotees will take all the difficulties away. Prabhupada says, what is the safest place in this material world? Yeah, Prabhupada says, in Kirtan Ras. In the Kirtan. Was anyone there for the Kirtan and Lord Nityananda's appearance?
Yeah.
Did all your misery go away? For an hour and a half you had no misery. Because you're absorbed in the association of the Vaishnavas and the Kirtan. So if you want to destroy your suffering, then you have to take shelter of the devotees and the holy name. And that will take away all of your suffering. For one who is absorbed in the holy name and associated with devotees, there is no suffering in this material world. So he took all the poison, like that. And Prabhupada also explains that before you get nectar, before you can taste something in Krishna consciousness, first you must go through some difficulty. You must pass the test. Before Krishna will give you his mercy, you must pass the test. So what is the test? Krishna gives so much difficulty. In this case, he gave poison. So they worked so hard, so much effort, and first of all there was poison. But once the poison was gone, then they kept working, then they got the result. So we cannot give up easily. Krishna consciousness, Rupa Goswami says, Utsahan Nishchaya Daryat. Daryat means?
Patience.
Patience. You have to be patient. If you want to become Krishna conscious, it takes time. It does not happen quickly or immediately. So, by his mystic potency, he took all of the poison. Then the next chapter is called The Churning of the Ocean of Milk. Chapter 8. So we see in chapter 8 that after the poison is gone, then many valuable things begin to come from the ocean. So what comes from the ocean?
Lakshmi.
Lakshmi?
Yeah.
Aravata. Yeah. Lakshmi Devi. Yeah. Aravata, the elephant. Yeah, celestial horses. Apsaras. And it says many valuable things, auspicious things, they begin to manifest from the ocean. Some are given to the demons, some are given to the demigods. And then Lord Dhanvantari, he comes out of the ocean. He is the form of God who gives us Ayurveda. And he gives a pot of nectar. And the demons come and they steal that pot. And then the demigods, they approach the Lord and they say, the demons have taken the nectar, and the Lord assures them. He says, do not worry, I will get the nectar back. So then, at that time, Mohini Murti comes. So in Canto 8, you see many, many, many incarnations of the Lord. The Lord is appearing perpetually, maybe more than in any of the other cantos. He's coming in various forms. So he comes as Mohini Murti, and he completely bewilders the
demons.
The demons. So the lesson for us to learn is that we should be very careful when associating with the opposite sex. Because when you associate with the opposite sex, you become bewildered. Because what is the name for Cupid in Sanskrit? Kamadev, yeah. Always say Madan. Madan. So it is said that if you want to overcome the influence of Madan or attraction to the opposite sex, you have to become attached to Madan Mohan, or Krishna, who bewilders even Cupid. Attachment to Krishna is even more powerful than any attachment we can have in this material world. But it takes time to become attracted to Krishna. But if we do become attracted to Krishna, we'll lose all our attachment to this material world. So Mohini Murti, she says to the demons, just sit down. Right, in a line, demigod, you sit down in a line, then she says to the demons, I will serve the demigods first. Right? So then two of the demons become very upset, and they sneak in, they dress up as demigods, and they sneak in, they sit with the demigods. One's name is Rahu, and the other one's name is Ketu. And just when they take the nectar, and they're about to drink the nectar, they put it in their mouth, then at that time, Mohini, she takes Sudarshan, and she cuts off their head. So because the nectar was in their mouth, their heads become like immortal. And then they become the two shadow planets, Rahu and Ketu. And then it says at that time, from their mouth, from the demon Rahu, the demon Ketu, some of the nectar dropped onto the ground. And because it was nectar, it was very powerful, but because it touched the lips of the demons, when it dropped onto the ground, it became onion and garlic. And onion and garlic are very powerful. They have great, they're powerful medicines. Garlic is very powerful medicine. But because it is coming from the demons, it's very strong, but it stimulates you, gives you a lot of power. But it can make you too rajasic. So therefore, as devotees, we tend to avoid onion and garlic. Maybe as medicine, devotees will take some, but not as food. And it cannot be offered to Krishna. Like that. So these are very powerful medicines. But they overstimulate. And you see people, they tend to eat a lot of these things. And when they eat them, they become very stimulated. See, like Indian people? Have you noticed that Indian people are very stimulated? Has anyone been to India?
And bad breath.
And bad breath, yeah. Yeah, you see, India is very, like, worked up. Yeah, everyone's, like, very passionate. Yeah, they eat a lot of onion, a lot of garlic. Also, in Italy, they eat a lot of garlic. It's in all of their food, and they're very stimulated, very passionate, like that. So we have to be careful of these foods. They're not offerable to Krishna. Okay, and the next chapter is called The Lord Incarnates as Mohini Murti. So, the next chapter is called The Battle Between the Demigods and the Demons. And chapter 11 is called King Indra Annihilates the Demons. So you see that there is a great fight between the demigods and the demons. So in the material world there will always be conflict. The demigods and the demons are always fighting. And in Kali Yuga it is said the demon and the demigod takes birth in the same body. Do you experience conflict in your consciousness? Between wanting to surrender to Krishna and wanting to enjoy separately from Krishna? It's called divine and demoniac nature. Sura and?
Asura.
So both are within us. So this is the battle. So symbolically that means that within ourselves we have to overcome our demoniac nature. The only way you can overcome the demoniac nature, Krishna says in the Gita, he says to overcome the mind, right, you have to practice abhyas and vairagya. Vairagya means you have to become detached, and abhyas means constant practice. That's the way you can overcome your demoniac nature. You have to practice again and again and again, and then you will become overcome. You can defeat your demoniac side, but by constant practice and detachment from your demoniac qualities. Then, it is mentioned that the demons, they fought very powerfully, and Bali Maharaj, he was attacked by Indra and he was knocked down. But he was not disturbed. And it shows us the example of a pure devotee. This is why Bali Maharaj is considered to be one of the 12 Mahajans. The Mahajans show us how to be perfect in our consciousness. So even though he was being defeated materially, he was losing the battle, but Bali Maharaj still felt very enlivened. And he accepted, if I am to lose, then that is Krishna's desire or arrangement. If Krishna wants to protect you,
nobody can.
And if Krishna wants to harm you,
nobody can.
So for a devotee is the same. Krishna says in the Gita, happiness and distress, victory and gain, loss and defeat, all of these things are dualities. He says, tolerate them. So a devotee, he becomes tolerant. And Bali Maharaj shows us the perfect example. That even though he was being defeated, but he did not become disturbed. He just accepted this as Krishna's desire, and he just continued to surrender to Krishna. So the next chapter is called The Mohini Murti Incarnation Bewilders Lord Shiva. So Lord Shiva, he wanted to see this particular form of Mohini Murti. So he approached the Lord, he said, show me this form. And the Lord was amused that Lord Shiva wanted to see this particular form of Mohini Murti. So he displayed the form, but he said, you will become bewildered by this form. And then we see that Lord Shiva, he became bewildered by the Mohini Murti. So this shows us that even Shiva, this is one example in the Bhagavatam, there are many examples. The 10th canto will give us many examples. How Lord Shiva is always subordinate to Vishnu, or God, or Krishna. And we see that Krishna, he easily bewilders Mohini Murti. Sorry, Lord Shiva. In the form of Mohini Murti. Easily bewilders. So this shows the supreme position of Krishna. Far more powerful than Shiva. He is the all-attractive person. And Prabhupada mentions when Krishna becomes a woman in the form of Mohini Murti, this is the most beautiful woman. And Prabhupada says, even more beautiful than Lakshmi Devi. But then between Radha and Krishna, we see that Radha and Krishna are completely equal. Yeah, because Radharani can defeat Krishna, Krishna can defeat Radharani. So they're equal in every respect. So, when Lord Shiva, he becomes bewildered, he travels around the universe in that bewildered state, and his semen, it drops, and as it drops onto the earth, it becomes gold and silver. These auspicious, these coming from the semen of Lord Shiva. And we see that Australia is the most prolific gold country, gold producing country in the world. More gold comes from Australia than any other place.
South Africa
is nothing. Australia is the most prolific gold. No, it is. Australia is the most prolific. Even in Victoria, we have some very prolific gold mines up towards the Grampians. There's some very.
Next one is Brazil, Eddie. Next is Brazil.
Yeah, Brazil has a lot of gold too, South Africa. So as Lord Shiva was travelling around, his semen was dropping, and the silver and the gold were being created. Then the next chapter is called Description of the Future Manus. Then chapter 14 is The System of Universal Management. And chapter 15 is Bali Maharaj Conquers the Heavenly Planets. So we see in chapter 13, we hear about the 7th to the 14th Manus. So we described that in the early part of the Bhagavatam, from Canto 3 to Canto 7, we heard about Swayambhuva Manu and his descendants. Then at the beginning of the 8th canto, Shukadeva Goswami is asked by Maharaj Parikshit about the next group of Manus, and now we hear about the final description of the Manus. Because there are 14 Manus in a day of Brahma. So now the 7 to 14, they are described in the 13th chapter. So the Bhagavatam is giving us a chronology or a history of the entire universe. All of the different Manus within the universe is being described. The history of the universe going right back. Then the next chapter, which is chapter 14, it describes, chapter 14 is called The System of Universal Management. So we hear about the duty of the Manus. Now what is the principal duty of the Manus? Because we have one very important scripture called Manus Samhita. So what is the importance of the Manus?
Administration.
Administration, yeah.
Progenitors,
yeah, to create. Yeah, to create law and order. Specifically, to maintain Dharma. That is their main purpose.
They're called Raja Rishi.
Yeah, Raja Rishi, or Rajashi. Yeah, they're saintly kings. So they maintain Dharma within the universe. They teach us what is Dharma. And this, the law or the code of conduct for human society is based upon the Manu Samhita. So the Manu Samhita says that you must do like this, it teaches us how to live within this material world. So Manu, he maintains Dharma, and an example of the laws of the Manu Samhita is that the Manu Samhita teaches us if someone is murdered within human society by another person, then he must immediately be killed. In other words, we have the system of capital punishment. And we see in the news in the last few weeks that Australia is trying to protect some of its citizens who are in Bali who were smuggling drugs. They were caught, and now they're saying, do not kill them, but bring them back to Australia and give them safe haven. But according to the Manu Samhita, if one is harming other human beings, then his life may also be taken. That is just. So therefore, society has become very sentimental. Dharma is not being followed properly, and there is chaos being generated within human society. Whereas previously, the kings, they always followed the Manu Samhita, and they maintain law and order within society by following Dharma. Then the next chapter, which is chapter 15, it is called Bali Maharaj Conquers the Heavenly Planets. So he became very powerful, Bali Maharaj. Now what was the source of his power? We've heard this a few times in the last few cantos. How did Bali Maharaj become powerful? Yeah, because he's worshipping the Guru and following the orders of the Guru. So if one wants, the Bhagavatam is teaching us, if you want to become empowered to spread Krishna consciousness, you have to follow very strictly the orders of the spiritual master and worship very carefully the spiritual master. By doing so, one will become
empowered in one's Krishna consciousness. So this is the secret of success in spiritual life.
Who is that?
Yeah, well, that's because the guru was teaching him something which was
against Shastra.
Yeah, against Shastra.
So it means if the guru gives any order, they must verify it from the guru.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, of course. That's why we have guru, sadhu, and shastra. The guru must always teach something according to sadhu and shastra. So because Shukracharya was not teaching what was best for Bali Maharaj, he was rejected by Bali Maharaj. And even later on, Shukracharya says he did the right thing. Yeah. He says that he has acted properly because he rejected me because I was trying to stop him from worshipping Krishna or Vishnu.
The Lord asked him. He got it wrong, and then he said, no, because you have accepted everything, so everything is right.
Correct. Okay. The 16th chapter is called Executing the Pyavrata Process of Worship. So it describes about Kashyapa Muni. He, after being away in a meditative trance for some time, returned to the ashram of his wife, Aditi. And when he came back, he found that all the demigods had gone. So it is described here that Aditi, she requested her husband to perform the vrata so that the demigods could become powerful again. So we heard about this Payo Vrata in the previous chapter also. Sorry, the previous canto also. And now it is being described again. So in other words, if one wants to attain the mercy of Krishna, one has to perform Vrata. That's why at the time of initiation in ISKCON, we are given certain vows that we have to take in order to make advancement in spiritual life. If you don't take vows, you cannot advance in spiritual life, in Krishna consciousness. So, what are the four vows that we make at the time of initiation? We won't eat meat, fish, or eggs, right? And that also means tea and coffee, and onion and garlic, unless it's medicinal like that. Sometimes devotees, they become a little slack on these things. And some devotees, they'll have things with onion and garlic and things like that. Or, you know, they may deviate a little bit. So then...
Garlic is good for the cholesterol.
Yeah, that's what we said. As medicine, you can take it. Mm. That's good. So, no meat eating, no illicit sex. Controversy has come up in ISKCON in the last year or two. One devotee wrote an article about illicit sex with a big eye and illicit sex with a small eye. You might have been familiar with that article. What? Yeah, some devotees nodding their head like that. So then devotees were getting the idea that it's okay to have sex within marriage, which is not to procreate children like that. And then some devotees were beginning to preach like this. And it's okay. It's not ideal, but it's okay. No, but that was not Prabhupada's mood. No. Prabhupada's mood was, no, illicit sex means only for procreating children. And if you cannot follow that, then do not take initiation. Because initiation means you have to follow the regulative principle strictly. If you cannot follow strictly, then do not take initiation. We don't expect that everyone can follow this, this level of commitment in spiritual life. But if you want to take initiation, you have to follow that level of commitment. So no meat eating, no illicit sex, no intoxication, and no gambling. No. And every day we take the vrat, we will chant 16 rounds of the Maha Mantra every day. So once again, if you can't do that, because these are difficult things to do in Kali Yuga, most people cannot do them easily. So if you're taking these vows, then you have to stick to the vows. So don't take initiation unless you are ready. It's a big commitment. So to advance in spiritual life, you have to take vrata, vows. And that's how you progress in your Krishna consciousness or your spiritual life. So, Kashyapa Muni, handed down the Payobrata process, and by doing that, then the demigods became powerful once again. So unless we do some brata or some austerity, we cannot become powerful in Krishna consciousness. This is taught by Rishabhdev, Tapo Divyam. By doing transcendental austerity, then you will get Brahma Sokhyam, which means spiritual bliss, spiritual happiness, which is on the platform of Shuddha Sattva, or pure goodness. You have to perform austerity in order to do this. So the next chapters are called The Supreme Lord Agrees to Become a Diti Son. And chapter 18 is called Lord Vamanadeva, the Dwarf Incarnation. So as a result of Kashyapa and Aditi following these austerities, they were awarded with the Supreme Personality of Godhead Himself becoming their son. So it means for us that by performing spiritual austerity, then we can gain Krishna's association in due course of time. Whether or not he becomes our son, that is up to Krishna. If you're very fortunate, you will get a son like Krishna. Just like some of these children, they're just like Krishna, so pious and so pure and so well behaved. Very special devotees, some of these kids. When they're not climbing under the tables. Very good devotees, these kids. Very pure. Just like their parents. Highly qualified. So then the next chapter, the 18th chapter, is the appearance. Lord Vamanadeva, the dwarf incarnation. So we hear how this great personality, Lord Vamanadeva, he enters into the universe and he is worshipped by all the great personalities within the universe. All the great personalities in the universe, the demigods, the sages, they recognize him to be the Supreme Lord. Now the Supreme Lord is not subject, his body is Satchitananda Vigraha. So whether he takes, we've seen in the Bhagavatam, he has already appeared as a boar. That was the first time we saw the Lord within the Bhagavatam. First incarnation of Krishna was the boar. Right? And then we saw the tortoise, we saw the
fish,
we see the Mohini Murti, and we see the dwarf. So regardless of the form that Krishna takes, he is completely powerful and he is completely spiritual. Satchitananda Vigraha. His form is not ordinary. So although he appears as a dwarf, all of the demigods, all the sages, they worship him as being the Supreme Lord. Then the next chapter is called Lord Vamanadeva Begs Charity from Bali Maharaj. This is a very famous chapter. So Bali Maharaj, he appears before Vamanadeva, and Vamanadeva appears before Bali Maharaj, and Bali Maharaj wants to give him. No, he wants to give him charity. But he says, what do you want? He says, I will take 3 paces of land. So he thinks this is not very significant. But he understands this is the Lord. So there is some rasa being exchanged between Vamana and Bali Maharaj. So he sees that he is just playing, he's churning rasa with his devotee. So he says, you can take more than that. He says, no, I will just take 3 steps of land. So this is showing us the rasa that will appear more as the Bhagavatam goes on. In the 10th canto, we'll see the highest level of rasa between Krishna and his devotees in Vrindavan. So Bali Maharaj, he says, you take the 3 steps, and then Vamanadeva begins to take these steps. So the first step he takes the... he takes the lower planets and he takes the middle planetary system. On the second step, he takes the upper planetary system and he pierces the covering of the universe. Because our universe is covered by a shell which is made up of the Mahabhutas, or the great elements. So his toe goes through that, and then it hits the Karana Ocean, or the causal ocean, which lies between the river Viraja, which lies between the material world and the spiritual world. And then one drop falls into this material world, that is the Ganga, Ganges. And it lands on the head of Lord Shiva, because Lord Shiva is the only one who can break the force of the Ganga. Otherwise it would just smash the planets. As the Ganges enters into the universe, it would begin to destroy the universe. So Lord Shiva catches on his head, and then the Ganges begins to flow down through the heavenly planets to the earth, and then down to Patala, the lower regions. So in the heavenly region, the Ganges is called Mandakini, spiritual river, which comes down. So, Vamana Dev, then he says to Bali Maharaj, where shall I put my third step? And what does Bali Maharaj answer?
On the head.
On the head. In other words, he wants to surrender to Krishna. And this is the principle of bhakti, which is called? Atma Nivedana, full surrender to Krishna. This is the ninth item of bhakti. Shravanam, or hearing, is who shows us the perfect example of Shravanam? Parikshit Maharaj, right? Then Kirtanam, right? Then Smaranam, then Padasevanam, then Archanam, Parikshit Maharaj, yeah. And then Vandanam, Akura, and Dasham, Hanuman, and Sakyam, Arjun, and then Bali Maharaj is Atma
Nivedana,
fully giving everything to Krishna. So we are also meant to fully give everything to Krishna. That is called full, pure devotional service. So Bali Maharaj teaches us how to give everything to Krishna. He just says, you take everything. So then the next chapter 20.
Yeah. That consists of all the eight
what?
Atma Nivedana.
Includes all the eight.
Includes all the other eight.
Yeah, well, it's a separate one, but you can do the other eight while you're doing Atma Nivedana. Okay, so number 20, chapter 20 is called Bali Maharaj Surrenders the Universe. So, he is instructed by Shukracharya not to give the universe to Vamana Dev. Now, Shukracharya, why does he say this? Why does he recommend that he does not give everything?
Because so that he will not get anything. He will not get anything.
Yeah, because he's a smarter Brahmana. He's attached to... So you see, these days, in Kali Yuga, the so-called Brahmanas have become dependent upon taking charity from others. And therefore, they've lost their purity. So Shukracharya, he was worried about what he would... how he would benefit. If everything is gone, then what will he give to me? He maintains me. So a Brahmana, to maintain his purity and to maintain his potency, he should not become attached to accepting charity. Whatever he gets, he accepts, and then he gives away anything that he does not need. So that is actual Brahmanical life. But when the Brahmana becomes controlled by the king, then he cannot speak truthfully or freely anymore, and he loses his potency. So Shukracharya was this kind of Brahmana. He's not completely pure. He was attached. So he objected. But Bali Maharaj had rejected him. So in other words, a devotee can reject the guru if the guru becomes materialistic in consciousness. So we see if the guru is materialistic like Shukracharya, then Bali Maharaj, he gave him up. He did not follow his instructions. If Bali Maharaj had followed his instructions, he would not have attained Krishna, or pure devotional service. So the guru is materialistic, we reject him. If he helps us to surrender to Krishna, to reach Krishna, then he's accepted. That is the qualification of the guru.
Actually, his guru was benefited too, because now he controls the planet.
He already had that planet.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's his planet. Shukracharya's planet is Venus.
He had that before.
Yeah, that's where he lives, on Venus. Mm-hmm. Venus is the second most benefic of all the planets. Jupiter, which is Brihaspati, that's the best of the planets. Gives you the most benefit.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at your Jyotish, if you have a well-placed Jupiter, you get a lot of benefit. If you get a well-placed Venus, you also get a lot of benefit.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Then chapter 21 is called Bali Maharaj Arrested by the Lord. So then, because he could not give the third step to Lord Vamanadeva, then he arrested Bali Maharaj and tied him up with the mystical ropes. Yeah, he was tied up by Garuda, I think. So we see that Bali Maharaj, even though everything was taken away from him, and even he lost his prestige. Because in that culture, if a Kshatriya cannot give what he promises, it is very disgraceful. So even that was taken from him. So sometimes Krishna takes everything from us. Even our reputation, which is the one thing that we have to keep intact under all circumstances. We can lose everything else. No, you can lose your wealth or your health even, or so many things, but you cannot lose your reputation. If you lose your reputation, then no one will respect you. And if people do not respect you, you cannot progress in material life or spiritual life. So everything was that was taken away from him. But even though that was taken away from him, still he did not reject the Lord. He continued to surrender to Krishna completely and fully. So that is called Atmanivedanam. Yeah, full surrender. Even when everything gets taken away from us by Krishna, still we have to surrender to him. Then, the next chapter is called Bali Maharaj Surrenders His Life. So Bali Maharaj, he shows us that perfect example that is shown in that chapter also. Chapter 23 is called The Demigods Regain the Heavenly Planets. So then, after being controlled or subjugated, the demons, by the Lord himself, then the demigods were given their heavenly planets. So the Bhagavatam is teaching us that we should not become Sakama devotees. The demigods are Sakama. They worship Krishna, but they want something. But we should not be like that. Not worshipping Krishna so we can go to Swarga, or so that we can go to Bali, or so that we can go to Moolamba, or so that we can go to... We always have material desires. But the Bhagavatam, in order to receive Krishna's grace, you have to give up all of your material attachments. So the demigods, they are Sakama devotees, but a devotee should be Nishkama. Krishna Bhakta Nishkama Ata Eva Shanta Bhukti Mukti Siddhi Kami Sakali Ashanta. As long as you have material desires, you cannot be peaceful. You'll be ashanta. But a devotee becomes peaceful because he's fully surrendered to Krishna. He's nishkarma. Therefore, he doesn't have any material desire. So the Bhagavatam is teaching us to render pure devotional service to Krishna. And the final chapter is called... What was the last chapter? Macha, the Lord's fish incarnation. So we hear the pastime of how the king, whose name was Satyabrata, then he discovered this little fish, and the fish, he put them into a larger body of water, and he got bigger and then bigger, and then he put him into the ocean, he became big. So he understood this fish was actually the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So even when the Lord takes the position of a fish, which is considered to be the lowest species of life within the material world, still he's completely transcendental. And that fish, at the time of the flood, the pralaya, when the universe was flooded, he protected the Vedas so that all of us have the Vedic literatures, so that we can take advantage of the Vedic literatures and go back home, back to Godhead, which is the goal of our life. So that is the eighth canto in summary. And next week, we will begin the ninth canto, Ashwini Bhagavatam. So I have the course materials here. So if anyone last night, if anyone did not come last night, or for anyone who might have came late, the Canto 9 course material is there. You can take the course material. And we gave out the key memory verses. The key memory verses were given at the beginning of the class. If you did not get the key memory verses, then speak to one of your friends, and they will give you the KMVs for this first section. This year we plan to finish the 9th canto, and then next year, we'll, by Krishna's grace, then we'll begin the 10th canto. Next week I will give you your open book exam topics. Srila Prabhupada ki, Bhakti Vedanta course ki, Srimad Bhagavatam ki.